This Weekend starts right after this.
In 2001, Vonage revolutionized home phone service, making it better. After such a colossal breakthrough, who would have objected if Vonage said, "Enjoy better, world. Vonage will be at the spa." But today, Vonage is not at the spa having its trouble area worked on, but transforming communications for your business with award-winning cloud-based solutions. See how your business can get the better it deserves. Call 1-800-5-VONAGE or go to Vonage.com. Vonage, the business of better.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Tackling booze problems on campus. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for joining us. Here's what's coming up this hour. We'll examine how serious the alcohol abuse problem is at our nation's colleges and how the issue can be addressed. Also, how to fix the attitude your kids may develop before, during, and after Halloween this weekend. Plus, what's happening in your mind when you can't get that one song out of your head? And the new trend on board the plane, bigger overhead bins.
So what Boeing came up with is a bigger bin that allows you to turn bags on their side rather than lying them flat. And if you do that, you can get 50% more bags into the same bin.
Wall Street Journal airline writer Scott McCartney on overhead bins that actually fit your bags. He's here later in the hour. Well, as it's been for decades, alcohol abuse continues to be a problem among college students, from binge drinking to underage drinking. How serious is alcohol abuse among college kids, and what can be done to deal with it? Here's Randy Havison, nationally known alcohol and addiction abuse counselor, who's got a new book called Party with a Plan. Randy, explain the issue.
The issue is that we continue to see the same amount of problems associated with alcohol and other drugs that we've seen for decades, centuries.
And the problems are what?
The problem is, that I believe, is that there's no clear message to teach college students how to make good decisions with alcohol. The two messages that they've been hearing up until now are either just say no, which doesn't work for 75% of the students out there, or the other message is be responsible, which I believe means absolutely nothing. If you go to a campus and you ask five random students to define responsible drinking, you get five completely different answers. Mm. So it basically invalidates the term. So what I wanted to do is put something together that teaches students how to make decisions with alcohol based on what's safe versus not safe, high risk versus low risk.
All right, and so there's the dangerous assumption here, right, that this has to be addressed for all ages in college, say from 18 to 22, which includes underage drinking. All right, so what do you tell...
That is true.
Explain what you say to those kids. Like, first of all, it's illegal, number one. Second of all, if you're going to do it, right, is that how it begins?
If you're going to do it, my whole thing is, you know, it's about risk, low risk versus high risk. And if you're under 21, then any risk at all, any use at all, is high risk because you have to deal with certain consequences that people over 21 don't have to deal with. So it's important to put that out there. Basically, the analogy I use when I talk to students is it's like putting up a speed limit. Now we finally have a speed limit when it comes to alcohol. If you stay at or below the speed limit, your chance of getting in trouble is much less. However, the faster you go over the speed limit and the more often you go over the speed limit, the more chance you have of getting in trouble. So for people under 21, the suggestion is don't get in the car.
Yeah.
But if you are going to get in the car, which we know that a lot of people 18 to 21 do drink, I at least want them to have the tools to make better decisions when it comes to drinking.
So if schools need you to come speak, that says to me that campuses are not doing an effective job of communicating stuff.
You know, they are doing a much better job than they used to. They're addressing alcohol education, alcohol prevention. There are even a lot of schools now that have programs for students in recovery. And one of the best programs in the country is In Your Backyard over at Rutgers. They have an amazing program out there run by Lisa Lateman. But the education and prevention, again, my theory is there hasn't been a really clear message that students can grab onto that really makes sense to them and reinforces, hey, I'm an adult, I'm making my own decisions, but it teaches them how to make good decisions. So there are a lot of schools that are doing some good work out there, but I'm hoping that this is going to add to give them a very clear message that they can pass along to the students.
We're speaking with Randy Havison, addiction counselor, also author of a book called Party with a Plan, and we're talking about alcohol abuse on college campuses. All right, so as you know, underage drinking has been around forever. When it comes to college campuses, why is it still a struggle to communicate this stuff? Is it the messenger or the person receiving the message?
A little bit of both. I think peer pressure plays a huge role in this. It's kind of the expectation that when you go to college, you're going to drink and get crazy and do all this stuff. But more and more students are realizing that's not what they want when they go to college. So we're actually seeing the number of students who are abstaining from alcohol completely. That number is starting to rise. It's gone from, I think it was 22% a few years ago, and now it's up to 24%.
Really? All right. So,
yeah.
The cynic in me will then wants to ask this question. In some ways, has pot replaced alcohol?
It hasn't replaced it, but it has definitely made it worse in terms of the problems that students are experiencing. Because especially when you add marijuana to alcohol, what happens is it creates a synergistic effect where 1 + 1 doesn't equal 2. 1 + 1 now equals 4 or 5.
Okay.
So it can really play havoc on the system and on the person that they think they're in control, but they're really not. You know, this whole marijuana issue is getting way out of control. We're seeing so many problems with this on campuses around the country.
So general rules of thumb, if there are any, for when it comes to how you speak to college kids for drinking responsibly, do you say, I mean, there's the one, the one per hour. Right, but for example, you can't just do that shot and expect your blood alcohol content to be okay. Right, by the end of the hour, it might be, but right, isn't it true? If you have drinks in like close succession, it makes things worse.
Exactly, because the liver can metabolize and handle 1 ounce of alcohol per hour. So that's why to have no more than one per hour is not going to tax the liver to the point where it's going to have to shut down or work too hard. The point of the low-risk guidelines is to let people enjoy alcohol without the intoxicating effects. That's what we're looking for here.
Thanks, Randy. Randy Havison, nationally known alcohol and addiction abuse counselor. The book is called Party with a Plan. 13 minutes after the hour on This Weekend. Getting your mailing and shipping done can seem like a no-win situation. First, going to the post office takes up valuable time, and leasing a postage meter is expensive with multi-year commitments and hidden fees. Luckily, there's a better way. Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package right from your desk using your own computer and printer. Even get special postage discounts you can't find at the post office. Plus, Stamps.com is more powerful than a postage meter at just a fraction of the cost. You can save at least 50% compared to a postage meter, and you'll avoid those time-consuming trips to the post office. Right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use my last name, Deal, for this special offer. A 4-week trial plus a $110 bonus offer, including postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Deal. That's Stamps.com. Enter Deal. A parent's favorite time of year, right? Halloween. Sorting through garbage your kids will never eat. Attempting portion control, sugar highs, etc. What if your kid develops an attitude during the sugar craze? How to manage it? From Dr. Ken Lehman, a psychologist and author of a book called Planet Middle School. Dr. Lehman, what do these kids do?
When they're bolder, they'll do anything. They'll show off. If you recall your middle school years, if you liked a girl, you didn't go up and just talk to the girl. You brought 3 or 4 henchmen with you, made a fool of yourself. At Halloween time, they're full of sugar to begin with. The point is that you're the adult here, okay? You set the tone for things, and you can give kids vitamin N, which is no. Hopefully, you give them what I call vitamin E, which is encouragement. But some kids are kids. I mean, they get nasty, and in groups, it gets worse.
All right, so in having the conversation with your own kids first, you should be saying what?
You should be saying to kids that I expect the best of you. I used to tell my kids when they went out, hey, don't forget you're a Lehman. And someone drilled me on a show once, Gordon, and said, what does that mean? I said, I don't have a clue what that means. It just means there's an expectancy that you're going to behave yourself. I think when you give trust to kids, and kids want to go out in a group and you're not so sure, and you say, okay, I'm going to let you go, but I just want you to know I'm trusting you. And if you hear that little something inside of you that says, uh-oh, I want you to back off and get out of there and call me if you need to.
Let me ask you this. So if I open the door, group of strangers there, middle schoolers, kind of acting up. They're on my front porch. Can I offer some, say, quote, encouragement to them to change their behavior? Or should I just shut up, give the candy, and close the door?
No, I don't think you play Dr. Phil at the door. They're interested in candy.
Right.
And you give them the candy and you leave. No, you don't play psychologist at the door. But I think you use common sense. It seems to me that so many parents today just don't use common sense. So with your own kids, you're the parent. You prepare those kids to go out in groups. And my suggestion in Planet Middle School to middle school kid parents is teach your kids to be the one that's compassionate. You want to stroke that, because these are hedonistic little suckers, Gordon. They could care about no one but themselves.
Mm, good. I like it. We're speaking with Dr. Kevin Lehman, psychologist and also author of a book called Planet Middle School. And we're talking about dealing with unruly kids on Halloween. All right. So one of the notes here talks about responding to your kids' drama and not reacting to it. Meaning what?
Well, again, kids are weird, and they'll say things like, what's for dinner tonight, Mom? A chicken, honey. Oh, chicken! I hate chicken! 3 nights ago, the same kid ate 3 helpings of chicken. What I would suggest is, honey, tell me, what would you like special this week? He said, well, I would like just hamburgers grilled outside. Well, let me write that down for you right now. Got it. I think we'll do that Thursday night. In other words, you help take the wind out of the kids' sails. Kids are stupid. They say stupid things. You might like this one, Gordon. There's a similarity between us husbands and middle schoolers. Husbands hate questions.
Yeah, it's true.
Kids hate questions. So rather than grill your kid with, what'd you do in school today, honey? Nothing. When your kid says something interesting, you might say, wow, tell me more about that. Another real quick tip. The music is blaring down the hallway. Go down the hallway. Okay, say, honey, could you turn that up a little bit? And the kid will look at you and say, what? Would you turn it up a little bit? And the kid goes over and turns it up a little bit. And say, by the way, you must really love that group to play that music that loud. I know you're busy now, but sometime I'd love to have a conversation with you about that group.
Do you think that kids' behavior or drama is worse these days than it used to be, or is it just the same with different faces?
No, I think it's worse, and I think parents today knock themselves out to make their kids happy. There's times your son or daughter has to be unhappy.
Yeah.
Now, maybe your kid at 13, and they'll do this, four-letter words you, Mom, on Halloween night when they're going to go out with their buddies.
Yeah.
Now, I ask you, would you really let that kid go out?
They're probably not for 2 years in my house.
Yeah. I'd say, hey, the car's not moving, and neither are you. I'm not taking any place. But, Mom, I'm still angry with what happened this morning. See, if you're a mom, you represent all of womanhood to this young man.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So you need to hold your ground. They are so driven that their kid isn't going to succeed, and they do things for them. They snowplow the roads of life for them, and they have the weirdest ideas. Oh, Dr. Lehman, we believe every child should be a winner. Every child gets a trophy, so right. We've enrolled Melissa in non-competitive soccer.
Right.
I think you just have to create a relationship with your kids that's based upon respect. You can't be a pushover for the kids, ever.
Thanks, Dr. Lehman. Ken Lehman, psychologist and author of a book called Planet Middle School. He was funny, right? Could be the phrase of the month when he called kids hedonistic little suckers. It's 22 minutes after the hour. Why is it that some songs repeat in your mind over and over, even ones you don't like, right? You sing them regardless. Got kids who like today's pop nonsense like mine. It can be awful, right? Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
Ever have a song stuck in your head that you just can't get rid of? Scientists are actually studying this phenomenon, why it happens, and what we can learn from it. Joining us now with more is the Wall Street Journal's Melinda Beck. Melinda, why are researchers interested in earworms?
Well, for one thing, Jennifer, it's a universal phenomenon. Studies have actually shown that more than 90% of people have had this experience at least once a week, and about 25% of people have them several times a day. Plus, this universal phenomenon is giving scientists a new avenue to look at both how memory works and also what's called spontaneous cognition, the thoughts that pop into our head completely beyond our control.
How do scientists actually go about studying it?
Well, it's been difficult to actually do brain scans of an earworm in progress. That's what scientists call these songs that get stuck in your head, because the true ones that they want to study the most are completely involuntary, and they would love to know where those start in the brain. But they have learned and they can't do that because if they're really involuntary, they're hard to schedule in time to have a brain scan. But they have learned quite a lot from lab experiments and diary studies and just surveys asking people about their earworm experience and what else was happening at the time, where they were, how they felt about these songs that popped into their head.
Is there a particular time of day or night or something when earworms plague us?
I found this fascinating. Several studies have found that they tend to occur most when the brain is kind of idling. You're walking down the street or showering or exercising. And one researcher I spoke to likened them to kind of sonic screensavers that the mind entertains itself with while it's kind of on standby.
Melinda, do we all suffer from earworms?
Well, yes, it sounds like we do. Some people seem to suffer from them more often. People who listen to music frequently, are in the music business, have had a lot of musical training, tend to hear them more often. People who have slightly obsessive-compulsive tendencies tend to be more annoyed by them. But you really can't live in the modern world and not be bombarded by music all the time. And a lot of time, your brain just sort of feeds it back when it doesn't have anything else to do.
Is there a particular kind of song we get stuck in our head?
Well, that's something that both scientists and songwriters have been trying to study. The music industry seems to think that very short bursts of what they call hooks and repetition will make a song particularly catchy. Taylor Swift's Shake It Off. It's a good example of that, but actual neuroscientists and music psychologists have been studying the lists of songs that people cite as frequent earworms in thousands of surveys and trying to pair them up with songs that seem of similar popularity, often by the same artist, that don't get cited, and trying to find what musical patterns there are. But the bottom line seems to be that they're really highly individual. It really depends on kind of what's in your own mental musical library, and that has to do with, you know, where you went on vacation. If you heard that Small World at Disney World song, or watched Gilligan's Island a lot, or loved James Bond movies, all those different experiences can put different musical tracks in your head that pop out sometimes just with random associations.
This weekend's Jennifer Koshenka with the Wall Street Journal's Melinda Beck.
You always want to look great, but don't have the time or the patience to go shopping. With Trunk Club, you never have to set foot in the mall again. Trunk Club takes the hassle out of shopping by shipping you a trunk of clothes that fit perfectly and make you look like $1 million with all the new fall styles. At trunkclub.com/morning, all you have to do is answer simple questions about your style, preferences, and size, and then you are assigned an expert stylist. They curate clothes from the best premium brands, and you approve what you like. Just like that, a trunk arrives on your doorstep filled with hand-picked clothes that are perfect for you. Try them on, keep what you like, and easily return what you don't in their prepaid trunk. This is not a subscription service. You only pay for the clothes you keep. No hidden charges, just great clothes. And right now, their entire styling service is free. Even the shipping. You only pay for the clothes you keep. To take advantage, go to trunkclub.com/morning. One more time, that's trunkclub.com/morning for a trunk filled with clothes you'll love wearing. The New York Mets run to the World Series could mean the team will no longer have to operate on a small town budget in a big city market. Sports business reporter Thomas Barabi at International Business Times says the Mets are expected to earn an extra $45 million in revenue thanks to their championship run. But then what? Tom, explain it.
You know, any Mets fan can tell you the team in the mid-2000s during the Carlos Beltran years was very successful. They had the standard New York payroll, you know, top five for about a decade. And then near the end, as some of those contracts started to come near the back end, and and the team had a few other issues pop up. Citi Field opened, which created a lot of debt. The Madoff scandal, which the Wilpons were heavily invested in. Essentially, the team lost the ability to spend that much money. So they had to switch over to a more middling, about $100 million payroll, about middle of the road for baseball purposes, but not what Mets fans were really used to.
Yeah.
And that kind of it handcuffed their ability to compete for a number of years. They actually, before they got back to the World Series this year, they had, you know, six straight losing seasons. So it made things tough for the team.
All right, so where do they stand now? Because obviously they've had a good run. They're in the World Series. What does that mean financially?
So before this run happened during the season, somebody with knowledge of the team's finances told the New York Post that they expected to lose about $10 million just based on payroll and the revenue they were generating, attendance. This run, which, I mean, for most baseball people was pretty unexpected, has kind of flipped that completely over. So now they're expecting a $45 million windfall in the positive through a combination of advanced ticket sales for next season as well as the home games for the playoffs through the World Series.
All right, so does it matter, I guess, whether or not the Mets win the World Series financially?
You know, the people I've spoken to have said that it's really mostly about getting there, and just getting your name out there. You're on a national stage. People see that you're back to being a marquee franchise. Hmm. So they should see the benefits either way. The figure that's been thrown out there is that they could expect to see about a $500,000 fan increase in attendance at the games, which could be pretty huge in terms of drawing more sponsors and increased gate receipts and that sort of thing.
All right, so with increased demand comes an increase in ticket prices?
Yeah, I mean, we could see that. Usually you see about a 10% bump in ticket prices after a season like this. The Royals had a similar bump where they saw their value go up as a franchise. They saw increased revenue, and that has obviously made it easier for them to compete as well.
Yeah. We're speaking with Tom Barabi, sports business reporter at International Business Times. His piece is called New York Mets Championship Run Could End Payroll Restrictions. All right, so speaking of payroll, now they've got some young guys, I hesitate to say, fairly on the cheap right now. Young guys, right, who have not gone into free agency or things like that. So what about being able to pay for some of this young talent that they have?
Well, this is the real big thing. So now, I mean, in the last few years, they've been restricted. They wouldn't be able to re-sign some of these guys. So now you have, the top three starters. You have DeGrom, Harvey, Syndergaard are all making very little money. They're still on their initial contracts. They're gonna be due huge deals in the next couple of years. Yoenis Cespedes, who kind of transformed the team's offense, is going to be a free agent. He's going to be due about $20 million a year annually, just based on how well he's done.
Jeez.
And then any Mets fan can tell you, Daniel Murphy had a kind of a Ruthian playoffs, and he is also going to be available, and there's going to be plenty of suitors who want to add that kind of bat and that kind of clutch hitter to their lineup. So whereas the Mets might have had to let some of these guys go or at least think about trading some of them, you might see them, based on how much the Wilpons are willing to spend and put back into the payroll, maybe pursue Cespedes, maybe pursue Murphy, and then certainly look to re-sign some of these young arms.
So you mentioned Sandy Alderson, the general manager. Does he get the credit here, by the way?
I think that a lot of it is you know, that they gave him the a limited budget to work with. He's kind of implemented his plan to the T. It's definitely been a little bit slow. People have had to be patient, but you're starting to see some of these trades he's made. He traded for Darno. He traded for Syndergaard. Developing DeGrom and Harvey. These are all guys that came up through the Mets system that have become key contributors, and I think that's a testament to Alderson's willingness to be patient and not go for the big splash.
Thanks, Tom. Tom Barabi, sports business reporter at International Business Times. It is 20 minutes now before the hour on This Weekend.
You appreciate the feeling of a clean, smooth shave from a quality blade. So why are you messing around with generic razors that cost $32 for an 8-pack when you can shave with Harry's high-quality German-engineered blades for half the price? Harry's will give you their starter set, complete with a razor, three of their world-famous blades, and shaving cream for just $15. And shipping is always free. We'll also give you $5 off your first order. So go to harrys.com right now and enter code 7799 at checkout. Code 7799.
Coming to an airline near you, more space in the overhead bin. You heard me correctly. Imagine that. Airlines doing something to help a customer. Here's Wall Street Journal airline writer and travel editor Scott McCartney, who's based in Dallas. Scott, how are they doing it?
So it's really an engineering breakthrough of sorts. And you might look at it and say, why didn't they think of this sooner? And I think that's a fair question. But
Basically, Boeing travelers themselves got frustrated with the lack of overhead bin space, just like everybody else. And so some engineers sort of sat down and said, well, what can we do about this? And started thinking up ways to create more space for overhead bags. And about the same time, Alaska Airlines went to Boeing and said, you know, we've really got this problem with overhead bins. Can't you think of something that would solve it? And so what Boeing came up with is a bigger bin that allows you to turn bags on their side rather than lying them flat. And if you do that, you can get 50% more bags into the same bin.
Oh, wow.
So the the standard bin on most Boeing deliveries now is 60 inches long, and you can put four bags in it. But if you can turn the bags on the side, and the key is those bags are almost universally 14 inches wide.
Yep, yep.
So that becomes the height when you turn it on the side. It's kind of like putting a book on the shelf rather than lying it flat. So flip the bags on their side. Now you get six in instead of four. And instead of, on an Alaska Airlines 737-900, instead of 117 bags, which is woefully inadequate for 181 passengers.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
You can actually get almost 180 bags, 174 bags, 57 more bags, and, you know, potentially 57 happier customers.
Nice. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal airline writer Scott McCartney about overhead bins that actually fit bags. All right, so when are we going to be able to start using them, though? Who's introducing them and when?
So Alaska is introducing its first plane with it this week. It was delivered Friday, goes into service this week. Alaska's taking these big bins on all their future 737 deliveries, and they're going to retrofit into a lot of their existing 737s.
Wow.
And so by the end of 2017, they'll have half their fleet with these bigger bins. Delta and United have also said they will take the bins on future deliveries. American told me they have just recently decided to order the bins. They're an option, so they're going to order them on future deliveries, and they're considering retrofitting. United also said it's considering retrofitting. There's an expense here for airlines. Boeing and the airlines won't say what the expense is, but there's also a savings in potentially fewer delays. When the gate agents are fighting with customers over, hey, there's no more overhead bin space, you got to check your bag, that all takes time, and flights get delayed. And that's a cost to airlines, as well as it's become a huge hassle for travelers.
All right. Thanks, Scott. Wall Street Journal airline writer Scott McCartney. It's 13 minutes now before the hour on This Weekend. Ever wonder why some people are single, even though they seem willing to be in a relationship? Market Watch reporter Katie Hill has a list of things that make you very unattractive to the opposite sex. Katie, take us through it.
What's interesting to me is women have slightly more deal breakers than men. So sorry, fellas, but that's the truth. Not a ton more, but they have about, you know, six, and men have about five. So still a lot of deal breakers here. The first one, which I thought was interesting, I don't know. I thought for sure, I don't know what I thought would be number one, but the number one deal breaker here is a disheveled or unclean appearance. If you look like you just rolled out of bed and you got maybe a little bit of a funky smell, nobody wants to be in a committed long-term relationship with you. Done. And that is the number one deal breaker.
That's
I know.
That's
isn't that surprising? Right.
No, not surprising, I guess, but that it's so high on both lists, right? It's number one on both lists.
That's right. Right.
Yeah. Appearance. Yeah, I mean, that gets back to that first impression thing, right? It's visual.
Yeah, no, and yeah, it is. And it just said disheveled or unclean appearance. I mean, who knows? I guess I was imagining a rumpled, you know, guy and thinking, oh, I could get over that. But I guess other people really can't.
All right, what else made the list?
Lazy. If you're lazy, number two on the list, this is particularly true for women. Women do not like lazy guys. So men, you know, get up, get out of bed, take a shower so that you're not disheveled, and then go to work, because women are not into it. So yeah, 60% of men said that was a deal breaker, and 72% of women. So this is a big, big issue for women.
Wow. All right. And too needy also. Meaning what?
Meaning you just constantly need attention, you know, and you had a bad day, pay attention to me,
yeah.
Just constantly, you know, nagging and nagging for attention. This, by the way, was a bigger deal breaker for women than men again. 69% of women said that too needy was, not going to be in a relationship with you if you're too needy. Men, about 57% of that.
Wow. I I'm, I guess, somewhat surprised because I thought lacks a sense of humor would actually be higher on the list.
Agree. Agree. But no, you can be a humorless. You can be a humorless person as long as you have a clean appearance. You're not lazy. You're not needy, right?
Right.
But yeah, 50% of men said lacking a sense of humor was a deal breaker. 58% of women said the same.
Speaking with MarketWatch reporter Katie Hill about traits that may render you undateable. All right, obviously sex came up here. Bad sex, low sex drive. This is important. Not as important as I thought it might be on the list, but they're on there.
Right. I mean, right. If you're disheveled, but you're, you know, that's number one here. But yeah, bad sex, that was about 50% of women, 44% of men said no good. Low sex drive, 39% of men, and just 27% of women said that that was a deal breaker. The funny one to me, watches too much TV or plays too many video games. 41% of women say no go. So, you know, hide the Xbox when she's coming over, by the way, if you're hoping for a long-term relationship.
Yeah, not right. And the stubbornness, too.
Right. This was funny. I don't know that I would have put that in the top 10 deal breakers, but that's what they found. This is roughly equal amounts of men and women say that if you're stubborn, no good. About a third each of men and women say that is a relationship deal breaker.
Wow. And then one, I guess, kind of an obvious one, but lives 3 or more hours away. The distance thing can be tough.
Right. And I'm sure that, I mean, that makes total sense. That's about 50% of people said if you live more than 3 hours away, don't do it. So, right, if you're online dating and your map is starting to stretch you know, quite far out, probably not going to work out for you.
Thanks, Katie. MarketWatch reporter Katie Hill, who's based in New York. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend.
You're a small to mid-sized business with 300 to 3,000 employees. You face the same network security challenges as big businesses do, but can't support a big IT investment, leaving your doors open to advanced cyber threats. Barracuda Next Generation Firewalls provide all the core features of enterprise firewalls and UTMs, but without hidden costs and deployment hurdles, making owning a big business firewall no big deal for your SMB. Reclaim your network. Try a Barracuda Next Gen Firewall risk-free at barracuda.com/firewalls.
This is Halloween. This is Halloween. Pumpkins scream in the dead of night. This is Halloween.
The Halloween candy that'll be around after the weekend will presumably be around for a while, but how long will it take before these sweets go bad? Does a candy bar ever expire? Slate.com says yes, but it might last until next Halloween or beyond. Candy bars are high in sugar and low in moisture, both of which help to prevent microbial growth. Pure chocolate can last for 2 years or more. The white spots or haze that sometimes appear on old chocolate bars is known among chocolatiers as blooming. And it's harmless to your health, by the way. It's not mold, but rather a splotch of fat or sugar that's risen to the surface. Fat blooming is caused by fluctuations in temperature, while sugar blooming is caused by condensation and changes in humidity. Slate.com says to avoid this, keep your candy bars in a cool, dry place away from the sun. What's the most unhealthy Halloween candy bar? Probably the Twix or the Baby Ruth, highest in both calories and saturated fat. As a general rule, sugar candies, by the way, tend to be lower in calories than candy bars, at least per serving size, though sticky candies tend to be worse for your teeth. That'll do it for this hour. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.
In 2001, Vonage revolutionized home phone service, making it better. After such a colossal breakthrough, who would have objected if Vonage said, "Enjoy better, world. Vonage will be at the spa." But today, Vonage is not at the spa having its trouble area worked on, but transforming communications for your business with award-winning cloud-based solutions. See how your business can get the better it deserves. Call 1-800-5-VONAGE or go to Vonage.com. Vonage, the business of better.
Hey, thanks for listening. If you love our show, we'd love it if you took a few minutes to give us a review on iTunes. And while you're at it, make sure you like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter with the handle @ThisMorningShow.